Hello again, Paul, my friend. Hello, come on in, have a seat. How are you this week?
Oh, Dr. Hardy Schnitzel. I'm worried about the friends that I have. Like, I've got this group of friends, they're the same. I just feel like I need probably new friends. Like a whole group of new friends. I'd like to just expand my circle, get some new blood in there.
So you're seeking some new blood. Will you travel to them, or will they travel to you?
I'd like them all to come to me, just a whole new group.
Oh, okay.
I'm feeling anxious.
Well,
but what if I get this whole new group of friends and they all suck? Podcast where we're working our way through every single DC event from Crisis on Infinite Earths in 1985 to who knows what whenever we stop. But this day, the journey has brought us to Bloodlines from 1993. Now, this was a pretty big event. It happened in annuals, and there were 23 annuals involved, and it ended with a really punchy little title of, called Bloodbath, which was two issues. But I'm not going to do this journey alone. I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Diablo Frank. Say hello, Frank.
I'm going to try my best not to make any NXS jokes.
Ah, thank you. Leave that to Dr. Ange. So, Bloodlines. Yeah, this is, it's hard to say who wrote it because of all the annual chapters, but the Bloodbath book, which sort of finished the whole event off, was written by Dan Raspler, and along the way we had writers like Doug Munch, Len Wein, Garth Ennis, Chuck Dixon, Robert Lauren Fleming, Mark Waid, Alan Grant, Paul Whitcover, Louise Simonson, Marv Wolfman, Jeff Loeb, and I've probably missed a few there, but that'll do for starts.
The whole thing started out in a Lobo annual that was done by Alan Grant and Christian Alami too, so that was sort of the unofficial first chapter, and then everything else sort of rolls out from there.
Yeah, so a different one, because it doesn't start with a book that leads in. It actually just hits the ground running with the annuals. So, yeah, Lobo in space messes with a sort of alien egg-shaped spaceship, and it heads towards Earth, and wackiness ensues. So this one, they're aliens. They're a bit derivative of the movie Alien and Aliens, a little bit, because they've got the tongues that lash out and grab people. They enjoy the taste of spinal fluid, which is pretty icky and weird. And 1 in 100 people who was attacked by them survives and gains superpowers. So 23 annuals, that means that 2,300 people were attacked. How does that sound, Frank?
It sounds like you just took my whole event synopsis. It's not a deep, involved event. The main thing to remember is that the new bloods that are created by the alien attacks are key to defeating the aliens, because Earth's familiar heroes falter against them in the first half, the bloodbath. It takes the new bloods to actually defeat the Bloodlines aliens, which is convenient.
Yes. So pretty much every annual, a new hero gets created. Yeah, and at the end of them all, they all team up and take down the aliens. So it's a bit formulaic, and I think in our terms of what we describe as an event, this one is a launcher. They were trying to launch new titles from this and new characters, and But given that this was the early 90s and Image had already started, I think everyone was holding back their best ideas for later, for when they weren't working for the man. Perhaps except for one book, but we'll get to that. So, Frank, what do you think is the biggest deals of this series for you?
Biggest deals. Well, I love the actual alien designs. I completely agree. They are derivative of the xenomorph slash predator mold. But Arthur Adams obviously enjoys doing this sort of thing. It was interesting to see how he would mix insectoid and mammalian qualities with the aliens. I also thought it was a nice gimmick that they were based on the Seven Deadly Sins, although very few writers really exploited that very much. So I just enjoyed looking at Art Adams' designs, and I enjoyed individual annuals. Like, I thought the Flash annual by Mark Waid and Phil Hester was a particularly strong one. Did a good job of selling the horror, which is difficult to do in a superhero title, since they are sort of inherently optimistic, and you know at least one or several of these people are going to survive by the end of the annual. Chuck Dixon and Jim Badlin did a good job with their Detective Comics annual. Really nice artwork. And then I thought the Adventures of Superman annual by Carl Kiesel, Tom Grummett, Ed Hannigan was fun. The Sparks new blood that was introduced in that annual reminded me a little bit of Kitty Pryde, and so I kind of dug seeing her go off and do some things within the DC Universe. But obviously the big highlight was the Demon annual by Garth Ennis and John McCrae, which launched the Hitman character, which went on to the greatest acclaim relative to Bloodlines that was ever seen.
Yeah. I'd also point out the Lobo annual, which reads like a 2000 AD comic, pretty much.
Yeah, and I love the artwork on that. Christian Alami's one of these guys that he didn't blow up because he was just too slow, but he has become one of the all-star inkers in recent years. Doug Minch really got to people's attention after Christian Alami started inking him. And he's got this gorgeous style that combines like Simon Bisley and Brian Boland and all these interesting mixes. But I'm a little resentful still to this day at Alan Grant, because there's only 7 Bloodlines aliens to begin with, and he had to have Lobo kill one of them in the very first annual when these guys are supposed to be spread out over all this space, and we're robbed of one of the aliens right off the bat.
Yeah, so the alien design, I mean, although they, you know, they seem to be based on dinosaurs and dragons in some ways. Yeah, the Art Adams designs are really interesting and cool.
Yeah, and unfortunately, for the most part, they only got spotlighted in the trading card set. You didn't get to see those designs very often. Art Adams only contributed a little bit to some promotional artwork. There was really little scene, so it's kind of a gem to find them in the trading card set.
Yeah,
and there's actually some design sketches online that you can dig up. I had them on my website at one point in time, but they may have crashed, where it shows scale of Art Adams drawing a mainstream DC hero against the Bloodlines aliens, and those are neat looking, but those, to my knowledge, never got published anywhere, because none of these annuals were ever collected.
Yeah, so of all the characters, what's the worst in your mind, Frank?
There's no contest. It's Jam. Everybody knows he's the Me Too hero. It's mind-boggling how awful Jam was. He literally was using his powers to sexually assault members of the Legion of Superheroes, and this guy was on the hero side. It's disgusting. It's hard to fathom that this guy was ever created. Even in 93, this dude was skeevy.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a few that are just like, no one could come up with an idea, but they still came up with one anyway, like Hook, the Hook, who is a guy with a hook from the Green Arrow.
It's an energy hook, dude. Energy hook, extreme! Well, and there's actually a story behind Hook, too. That was, you literally said that was a last-minute creation, because Mike Rowe came up with the character, decided after he'd already turned in the script, he was too good to give to DC Comics, and begged the editor to give that character back. I still suspect that might have been the basis for Shaman's Tears.
Right, okay. Not many of them hung around or stuck. Some of them became particular butt of jokes. There was Gunfire, who, Garth Ennis in the Hitman 1 million issue had a Gunfire of the Future abuse his powers and turn his ass into a hand grenade.
And it's funny, because that was one of the ones who got his own ongoing series. So you're really, you know, if the guys who actually got books out of this thing were fair game, you know, nobody cares about any of these characters.
Yeah. Is this a safe space, Frank? Can I talk openly?
Frankly, certainly.
I was so impressed by the Deathstroke annual that I wrote a letter, and it was printed in Gunfire Number 1. And I got Len Wein to sign it a few years ago.
I can't throw any shade. I'm just lucky those letters I wrote to Wolverine in that same time period didn't make it, or Wizard Magazine. So that would have probably been a little embarrassing for me today.
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, Argus from the Flash annual, he got a miniseries. Anima. What was this? She was in. Was it Team Titans or Teen Titans?
She was.
Or
in,
New Titans.
I think they actually did a Titans West special. And then she was part of one of the sporadic superhero massacres that occurs when you're trying to build up a new villain. She got killed off by Prometheus. But she did have her own ongoing series that ran for over a year.
Oh, wow. That long. I think I bought the first couple and I couldn't. I just couldn't. Loose Cannon, he was the Jeff Loeb creation, who was like a happy-go-lucky Hulk creature who sort of changed color as he got angrier. He got a mini series, if I recall.
I'd argue that's the Stan Lee Jack Kirby creation, but you know.
Yeah, and then there was Razor Sharp and the Cyber Rats. They got a mini series. Was it a series or a mini?
Mini.
Ah, good.
Plus,
good.
They popped up in Robin comics in that time period a little bit there. Those are some unfortunately exceptionally dated characters.
Yeah. So, and you know, there was a bit of some creepy stuff in the in Myriad's creation. She was murdered by Lex Luthor when he was masquerading as a young Aussie, and he was never brought to justice for that, as far as I can recall.
That, and that she was the only pre-existing character to become a New Blood, and she's also, outside of Bloodbath, I think one of the only ones that never appeared anywhere. They never even bothered to kill her off in a special or anything.
Wow, that is a harsh judgment. Wow.
Well, as you pointed out, she's radioactive, so, you know, what were you going to do with her? Every time you have her show up, it's a reminder that Lex Luthor went way too far that one time, and nobody wants to address that, because it's a story killer, basically. If you acknowledge that Lex Luthor did this, and you don't have Superman bring him to justice, you've cut the knees out from under Superman, so probably best just let her, you know, leave that alone.
Yeah, of course. So, now, you do a Bloodlines podcast, don't you, Frank, occasionally?
Theoretically, yeah. I was a little bit more gung-ho about it. But speaking of crimes from the past being back to haunt a comic book event, one of the creators involved got convicted, I think, at this point, of a heinous crime. And also, I committed some aesthetic crimes as well over the course of trying to, you know, mimic people's voices and things like that. So, as much as I want to finish the event, and I intend to, at some point I'd love to get you in there as the Tasmanian Devil, because we need to have that Aussie authenticity when we address that very important superhero. It's a very sporadic podcast at this point. I had always intended for it to go beyond the Bloodlines event, but because of the taint around it, it's hard to motivate myself to get those out. But there are like 15 to 17 episodes out there. Many of them deal with the Bloodlines event. And so if you want a deeper dive than is available to DCOCD, that's available to you.
Yeah, I recommend it as an alternate to reading some of these. It's actually a more palatable way to do it, I think, to learn what happened in the comic without actually having to experience the comics. So well done to you, Frank. And yeah, I hope that you come back to it in some form, though I understand the distaste. That's something that's impinging on this show a little bit as well. Anyway, are we ready to start the scoring, or is there any other comments you want to make about any of these heroes, nobodies?
I mean, again, a number of them got ongoing series. It was obvious that DC was trying their best to flood the market and take as much oxygen out of the room for Image Comics, especially, as possible. Marvel was doing the exact same kind of event across the hall. In fact, I strongly suspect that Marvel was ripping off DC's more long-term, well-planned event. And yeah, just everybody was trying to push out new characters. It was all about new. And it was basically like strip mall franchises. They were just constantly popping up with the expectation that they would find an audience, or at least deprive somebody else of an audience. And as you said, everybody was looking at the Image model and going, hey, I'm not just going to give my great character to DC Comics. And so we didn't get the highest quality guys. And one thing that was a little weird is at least there's some passion on the Marvel side. There were some of those Marvel editors that realized this was probably the only chance they were going to have their D&D character get adapted to comics ever. Where the DC guys really, with the exception of the ones that already had a place in mind for their characters to appear, or new talent that was very hungry, like Garth Ennis, who did a lot with the opportunity, these guys really were pikers, and unless it resonated with you specifically the way it resonated with me, it's very easy to just slag on these guys and forget they ever existed.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few which have some sort of visual interest. Like Prism is quite an interesting-looking character. He's a bit like Mr. Nobody with lighter features, but, you know, light-based powers. As you said, Sparks, the sort of electric girl. It's like a bit like Electric Starfire. Yeah, but some of them are just miserably generic and boring looking, like Mongrel and
nothing like a middle-aged white guy introducing a mixed race character into a book and calling them Mongrel to just start things off on the wrong foot.
Yeah, classy. I mean, that was really the end of the end for Ostrander and Hawk World and Hawkman at that point. Time to leave, I thought.
Well, I think Kupperberg did a spotlight story on Mongrel, too. So when you're bringing in both Mongrel and Kupperberg to help wrap up your run, the axe is coming.
Yeah, but as you said, there was a trading card set, which was probably one of the nicer-looking trading card set that DC had produced by that stage. Some really good designs, and the art was very well featured.
Yeah, that was actually one issue, though, is that the majority of the set, the backs of the cards are designed to create an enormous image of the super monster, the Ro-Beast, that was formed out of the various Bloodlines parasites called the Taker. And so you feel a little bit wasted because you've got images taken from the stories, but I guess, you know, they're fairly slight since it's only an annual apiece. So instead of getting a synopsis, you just get, you know, tiny portion of a giant image that wasn't really all that impressive once you put it all together on the backs of most of the cards. And then you had the character cards, and the downside of that was that the company didn't have the rights to any Batman-related characters, so nobody who appeared in the Batman annuals got their own cards, so it felt a little hobbled right out of the gate. But I do
not ballistic.
But I did like the borders, like the backgrounds. It was very 90s in that it's a bunch of blood splashes and stuff, but it is visually appealing. It's a good-looking set. But unless you were really into the Bloodlines event, it's sort of a non-starter in the card market. And I did the math. Just for dollars, I spent like $70-plus dollars on my box. And thinking about that now, it's a bit of a gut punch.
Oh, wow. Right. Well, I bought all the annuals new at the time, but I think over the years I've whittled it down to the 10 that I think were worth keeping. But yeah, I think it might be time for us to get into the scoring. So the way scoring works is Frank and I will score the event out of 10 for four categories, which are eventiness, writing, art and covers, and impact and legacy. And then we'll bring in our semi-OCD, who does the same thing, except we halve their score because they're not as fully involved in the show as we are. But that gives us a total out of 100, potentially. So if it's really good, which it may be, that we'll get to 100 today, but let's see. So for eventiness now, I think this had a good, you know, spread across the DC universe. It did a fairly good job of covering lots of books and involving everybody. The scale of the event seems a bit unworthy, the fact that there's just a bunch of aliens coming and they're attacking people. It's not really feeling like a world threatening thing until they slowly try and build it up as the series goes on, and even then it's fairly artificial and plot hammering to say, oh, this is the end of the world because all the aliens are dying, and as they sacrifice themselves they make a giant baby who's going to kaiju across the place and attack everyone. So with that in mind, I'm going to give it a 6. Where do you fall on this one, Frank?
I didn't agree with you. The problem is this is a horror-themed event, and unlike with Eclipso, where you get a sense of building scale since more and more heroes are falling to the dark side over the course of that series, it's really monsters killing people in the shadows for all the annuals, and then at the very end, the bloodbath, that's when you introduce the threat that's supposed to be world-shaking. It doesn't really sell, and it doesn't help the fact that during that summer, DC was breaking and killing off their biggest heroes. So you end up with also ran versions of Superman and Batman rather than the real deal. So it never feels like the Earth is truly imperiled. So while there's a lot of heroes involved, I think in part because the New Bloods take stage in the second half of Bloodbath, you're like, where the hell are all the characters I care about? I'm looking at New Bloods. I cared. I don't think most anybody else did. I give it an eventiness of 4.
4. Ooh. Yeah, I can't condemn you for that. All right. What about the writing, Frank?
Writing. I think that there are some good annuals and a lot of not-so-good annuals, and there is the very specific formula related to the event. Here's the thing. Harry Knowles once talked about Quentin Tarantino and agreeing with Tarantino that they didn't like porn. And then you watch a Quentin Tarantino movie and you watch him lovingly film various actresses' feet for long periods of time, and you hear some of the stories about Tarantino. Google Tarantino and Chode and you'll get a great little tale. So it's clear that it's not that Quentin Tarantino doesn't like porn, it's just that he likes his specific porn. And given that I saw Aliens in the summer of 86, and it was basically my favorite movie for years afterwards, this event is my porn. I'm totally into superheroes, I'm totally into horror, I'm totally into body horror, I'm into the alien xenomorph types. So for me, I could happily read essentially variation on the same story over and over again, but I don't think that's for everybody. And I think the actual Bloodbath event, which is one of the main things I judge these events on, is the core miniseries. Not particularly well written, just sort of felt slapdash and bloodless, ironically. So I give the writing overall 4 based on the handful of good annuals, but mostly drugged down by the mediocrity and sameness of general. And I acknowledge too that 4 may be highly personal. I think somebody with more objectivity may even come in lower than that.
Wow. Gosh. Well, I mean, unsurprisingly, I'm giving it 4 too, because I think it's not, if you take the balance of the books and the quality, I don't think the writing is that strong across that many of them. There's probably one or two that stand out. I quite like the Lobo annual, and I very much like the Demon annual that introduced Hitman, but I was already on board with the Demon series well and truly at that point. So yeah, 4. The Bloodbath books at the end, they're written by a man who is more famous for editing than writing, and I think that shows. I mean, he does his best because he's really balancing dozens and dozens of characters and trying to, you know, squeeze in little bits of characterization and at the same time give some sort of compelling plot. But it's, you know, it's too big a task for that type of writer. And I don't think, I think Dan Rassler does his best, but probably doesn't have all the, you know, the tools in his belt that he needs for this. So anyway, on to art and covers. So let's get this out of the way. The Bloodbath books have pretty terrible art. So there's nothing there that looks good. Yeah, there's only a couple of panels that I noted that thought, oh, well, that's quite a well-drawn panel. Most of them aren't. And then you're sifting through the annuals themselves. So I think the artists are doing their best with what they've got, and some of them have better stuff than others. So on the whole, I'm landing around 6 for that. What about you, Frank?
So here's the thing. You had Shag on for the Eclipso episode. And I think that, you know, despite your aversion to Bart Sears, DC benefited that year from having a few guys that were actually going to become part of the Image stable, the Valiant stable, the guys who were going to be featured heavily in Wizard magazine. And so for a company like DC that's never really been an art company, they've always been about writing and editing, that was a brief moment where they had an event where they actually had some kind of all-star or relatively all-star artists. By the time Bloodlines rolled around, everybody was trying to launch a new universe. Everybody was pulling talent to and fro. If you had great art, you often had lousy writing, and most of the artists were doing something more high profile than Bloodlines. I think Trevor Von Eden did a good annual. Mike Parabek did a good one. Mike McCone was always reliable. Bill Willingham did some nice work on Bloodbath, or decent work anyway. But overall, I think that perhaps this event has some of the worst artwork of DC Comics. In fact, it has overall some of the worst art DC ever had, because the standards got so low since the industry itself was so diluted that the talent pool just wasn't there. They're putting pencils in people's hands that should never have been published from a mainstream publisher. So, I mean, one in particular that gets me, like the New Titans annual was really horrible. There's a lot of bad, bad stuff where the writing isn't there, the art isn't there. So I actually have to give it a 3.
Wow. Okay. 3. I don't think this is going to beat Crisis. What about the impact and legacy, Frank? Surely it wins something on this.
It all hinges on Hitman. Hitman lasted for 5 years. It wasn't canceled. It came to an end. It's a well-regarded Garth Ennis series. Certainly up there with Hellraiser among his best non-creator-owned works. Arguably among his better works, because you know some people gravitate more toward his creator-owned work than others. I think Garth Ennis is a guy who benefits from having a little bit of an editorial hand to kind of keep him on the, you know, walking the line.
on the side of taste.
Yeah. And beyond that, though, these are the guys that show up, not even in events to get killed, like Infinite Crisis, although a bunch of them bit the dust there, but stuff like the Prometheus special, the Titans West special, where they just kill a whole bunch of them at once. They're killed off as jokes in, you know, specials. So Legacy is about a 4, you know, because, I don't even know how much people think of Hitman anymore. That one never got the prestige of a lot of Garth Ennis's other books. DC hasn't, I don't think they've ever collected the entire thing, right?
They have. They eventually did. They were slow to do so, but they got it out eventually in the whole run. But they haven't done the omnibus thing, which you'd think they would do now that they've got it all squared away. But they are out of print on the majority, I believe, the later ones now.
I'm sure it's coming. They just haven't quite decided to scrape the barrel that much. And I do think part of Bloodlines' legacy is it is much mocked. It is one of those events you bring up when you're trying to disparage a newer event. So I don't think there's a big rush there, but I'm sure at some point we'll get the omnibus, and I'll be the one schmuck that buys it. Or actually, more likely, I'll order it, and then DC will cancel it and it never comes out.
Well, yeah, I've got my trades, and I'm very happy to have them, and it's one of the a series that I do reread every year or two.
Yeah, Hitman's definitely a great book, John McCrae, I think, is a really underrated artist. He's definitely not Bronze Age model, you don't want him in your Marvel Handbook of the Universe kind of thing, but I enjoy how expressive it is. He's great at humor. There are very few superhero artists that can do humor as well as McCrae does, and I don't know if you've seen his stuff recently, but he's really stepped up his game in terms of detailing. It's got a great energy to it, and I wish he were doing some more high-profile projects.
Yeah, well, he finally made it to Image in the last few years, at least.
Oh, yeah, The Atheist, yeah.
Okay, well, for me, the impact legacy, yeah, you're right. Hitman is, it's the game with that one. There's some good efforts. Like, I'm quite surprised Argus didn't stick around in one form or another, but, I mean, they've stolen his name now for a DC organization, so he can't show up and be called Argus anymore, so I guess that's over. And, you know, some of them I wouldn't mind seeing back. I mean, I think Steve Orlando brought back the Terror Smith recently as a villain in Justice League of America, which was a nice surprise and completely unexpected. But, I mean, it's great to see someone, you know, seeing this stuff and treating it as, you know, DC Universe stuff to be mined, which is what fans like us have, you know, really dug over the years, is, you know, bring back characters, let's see them again. They don't have to be written off just because they're weird and goofy and they didn't stick the first time. You can do, you know, you can reinterpret them, but none of that has happened generally. So Hitman was the only one that made it out the gate, and yeah, for that reason I'm going 3 for legacy. So bleh. Okay, now we do have a semi-OCD, which is Chris Sheehan from the Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill, which is a fantastic podcast. They do a lot of sort of history digging. So they pick a comic and they go through some related history, and they do an excellent job. It's heavily researched. I don't know how they have time to do it. I would never podcast if it involved that much work. But they seem to be well suited for it, and I recommend you give them a listen. So this is what Chris had to say.
Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Sheehan. You might know me as the Chris half of Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill, where we go back to the past and discuss comics from the yesteryear of publishing each and every Sunday morning at chrisandreggie.podbean.com. Wanted to thank the fellas for asking me to be a part of this, you know, especially considering that Bloodlines is a very important event for me. Not very many people know, or have really cared to ask, how I'd gotten my start in podcasting. It's actually all due to the Bloodlines event. Back when DC was putting out that Bloodlines miniseries just prior to DC Comics Rebirth, the fellas from Weird Science DC Comics asked me to write up a quick and dirty article to introduce the concept of Bloodlines to their readers, to maybe prime the pump a little bit, even though the miniseries didn't have a whole lot to do with the event. From there, I would be asked to be on their show to discuss the first issue of that miniseries, and the rest, they say, is Weird Comics history. So, let's talk Bloodlines. Eventiness. I give that a 6 out of 10. You know, the idea of this event is a pretty neat one, and although it feels as though Marvel and DC at the time were just really doing their darndest to flood the market with key issues, you know, first appearances of, you know, unforgettable characters, it's still a pretty neat and sort of far out 1950s alien invasion sort of story, and really can't bring myself to be all that mad at it. Will I ever read it again? Probably not, but I don't hate it. I feel like the story they were trying to tell here more than carries the eventiness of the Endeavor. The fact that this was kept to the annuals rather than interrupting the ongoing story flow also helps things greatly. Looking back, it really tickles me to just see how much the market really informed this event. And, you know, the events going on in the Marvel annuals the very same time where we would meet, you know, the battling Bantam. It's a lot of fun to be able to look at an issue of Wizard magazine and just see all these key issues happening all at once in attempt to, I don't know, maybe line somebody's pockets, certainly not mine. We move over to writing, where I give that a 7 out of 10. You know, one of the things I will always give bonus points to is when a writer or a group of writers plays the ball where it lies. This cross-event, I started calling Brightest Day a cross-event when I was reviewing it, and I can't stop myself from referring to all crossovers the same way. It features the reign of the Superman characters, and it ends with the real Steel Deal back in the saddle. So, you know, and it doesn't seem like the stand-ins would have gotten their same due had this event occurred before or after this. So I really appreciate the fact that they didn't really... they didn't leave the current characters out, which means a lot to me. Feels like if that was to go on today, it probably would be a little bit different than that. Now, the fact that this all sort of made sense, the story in sum, is another giant point in its favor. So a 7 out of 10 for writing. If we jump to the other side of the table and talk about the art and the covers, I give that a 6 out of 10. This is an early to mid-90s comic, and... it's got early to mid-90s art, warts and all. I can't help but to like it because I'm a product of that era, but I totally understand that a whole lot of folks might not. There's a lot of, for lack of a better term, maybe dollar store image art here, where, you know, if you squint, you might think you're looking at an Image comic, but a much more low-rent version. You know, that's not to say that there aren't some books here with really good art, really great art, but it's definitely got a bit of that hard to put into words 90s-ness about it. Now, the covers might be where the art really shines here, because it's here that we actually get to see all these characters that they're going to be introducing. I thought that was really cool, that if you look at any issue here, you know who's being introduced, and that's a pretty neat thing, especially today where... covers don't always do a whole lot of anything. If we jump over to Impact and Legacy of Bloodlines, I give that a 3 out of 10. You know, this all kind of goes back to Hitman, doesn't it? I can't say that I'm the biggest Hitman fan out there, but I can't deny the appeal of the character and the series that bears his name, or that bared his name. Out of the 20-odd characters introduced, he's the only one that really had any kind of lasting power, so you gotta hand it to him there. Now, the other books that spun out, they were so short-lived, I can't really recall which ones were intended to be ongoings and which ones supposed to be limited series. Though I will say, I did enjoy Blood Pack. Having the team be sort of like a group of reality show contestants is one of the very few times that DC Comics was actually ahead of the times. Overall, though, Bloodlines was an interesting diversion and most definitely a product of its time. I don't think I'd tell anyone to rush out to the nearest cheapo bin to try to snag up every issue they can, but there are some gems here, there are some fun reads to be found. I'm not sure this love will be collected, I'm not sure we DC fans have quite broken that chain letter just yet. I definitely want to close out by once again thanking Paul and Mike for inviting me on board. This was a fun trip down Speculator's Lane. Thank you.
Okay, Frank, you ready for the let's find out what the total is? So, I'm adding up your scores, 4, 4, 3, and 4. You love it, don't you? That's 15 points from you. I gave it 6, 4, 6, and 3. That's 19. Yep, 19. And then Chris gave it 6, 7, 6, and 3, which adds up to 22. And we halve that down to 11. And then we add them all up. And 45. We are on 45, which, if we're going to look at the ladder, this is below War of the Gods. Wow.
Not in my personal standing. War of the Gods is still the bottom of the barrel for me as the show progresses, but it's only one notch above it, unfortunately. As much as I try to boost Four Bloodlines, it's more about the attempt. It's more about the inclusivity, the fact that the event had more heroes of color, heroes of various, you know, more diversity than, you know, anything else I could think of that DC's ever done. But that doesn't mean the actual product was all that good. The fact that it was clearly product in most cases doesn't help it. Even War of the Gods was clearly a passion project for George Perez, even if nobody else shared that passion. So I completely understand why it would come down so low on the list.
Wow. Millennium beat it. Brace yourself.
Millennium had some nice ideas. The execution maybe wasn't there, but at least Joe Staton and Ian Gibson did the entire miniseries, which is more than we can say for the two-book Bloodline specials.
Wow. Okay, so we might take a break and play your promo, Frank, and then we'll come back for feedback.
Autumn, Argus, Autumn, Ballistic, Argus, Cardinal, Ballistic, Sin, Cardinal, Channel Man, Sin, Chimera, Edge, Chimera, Freight Train, Geist, Gunfire, Acrat, Harry Force, Hitman, Hook, Jail, Joe Public, Loria, Crack, Layla, Lilac, Loose Cannon, Megabiter, Monglier, Myriad, Nightblade, Output, Pass, Prism, Razor Shark, Rodney Jane, Samaritan, Shadow Strike, Slingshot, Smart Shot, Terror Smith.
Wow, that's a lot of radical trademark names. And you may not have heard of any of them, but they were all introduced in DC Comics' 1993 Summer Annuals. Most went on to figure into more stories within their four-color universe. Many earned their own Spotlight series, and one became a cult hit from acclaimed creators. While the comics of the 1990s are often derided, for me, as a longtime comic book reader, I found a deepened fandom and a safe harbor from the Cronium Age in the DCU. I fell in love with the history and legacy found in generations of heroic mantles, and my journey into this continuity largely began with Bloodlines. Join me, Diablo Frank, as I explore the more overlooked areas of DC Comics' superheroes, beginning with an early 90s intellectual property-generating stunt and fanning outward towards other obscurities and icons, from throughout decades of sequential art stories, all flowing through the DC bloodlines.
Podcasts available on iTunes, Shout Engine, and the Internet Archive.
Right, so feedback. We got a lovely email from Jimmy McGlinchey from Ireland, and he said, "Dear Paul and Mike, thanks again for another two great episodes. I did ask my boss about taking a sabbatical so that I could comment more on your shows, as Paul suggested, but my boss wasn't that understanding, unfortunately. So, Eclipso The Darkness Within was the first DC event that I was in on the ground floor, so to speak. I got the first issue of the crossover that week it first came out, and even got the Black Diamond accessory." Was there a Black Diamond accessory? Yeah. Thought it was only stuck on the cover. Unfortunately, the diamond has long been lost. I love the Eclipso series that came out after that. It had a great horror feel to it and was not afraid of delving into the history of the character. The two-part Eclipso vs. Sherlock Holmes with art by Doom Patrol alumni Ted McKeever was very good, as was the chess game between Darkseid and Eclipso where they both swap stories. Regarding the series itself, it did make Eclipso more of a heavyweight in the DCU, and there was some very good character bits in it and some good individual stories. It did increase Hawkman's role in the DCU, as he was one of the leaders of the heroes as they made their assault on the moon. I also enjoyed the Superman arc of annuals, which had its own story within a storyline, as did the Batman-Robin annuals. The JLA annual was also good in making Blue Beetle more than just a comedic relief as he battled Eclipso single-handedly. However, reading the annuals one after another, the plot was very much the same. Get the hero angry enough so that he can become eclipsed, and then a subplot of Bruce Gordon taking away certain characters to prepare for the final battle. The death of Superman was another great storyline. The battle and death was basic enough, but the emotional punch came afterwards in the aftermath, with Superman's supporting cast dealing with the impact on the death of Superman. There were some excellent issues dealing with how Lois and the Kents handled the death of a loved one, culminating in Pa Kent's heart attack. There's also great character beats from Lex Luthor as well, who at this point was a 6-foot-something, fully haired Australian clone of himself. Ah, comics. Coming to terms with the death of his mortal enemy. The subsequent Reign of the Superman was also a great follow-up, with four individuals claiming to be the real Superman, and the writers did very well in advancing the mystery of each claimant. As you said in your podcast, the impact of the storyline was great, spawning a novelization by Roger Stern, a young adult novel by Louise Simonson, an excellent radio drama by the BBC, an animated film, am I right in saying there's another version coming out soon, as well as making it in the script of Batman vs. Superman. All in all, an excellent event. Looking forward to hearing about Nightfall next time out. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Jimmy.
To enhance Shag's aging faulty memory, I think that he, like me, was a weirdo who just took the diamond off of his cover of Eclipso number one and played with it. The only way you could get an intact Eclipso diamond, a full one, not a half, was by getting the DC Direct action figure from the late 90s.
Really?
That's my recollection anyway. A lot of people think that they gave away black diamonds. I've never seen one of those. I suspect I would have. I think that maybe people like Shag are combining those two things together into a promo that never existed.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear about it at the time, and I was on the pulse with that sort of stuff. Also got an email from Ange on the death of Superman. So more talk on the death of Superman. He said, another great episode. These flybys are economical, but sometimes maddening. I have a lot to say about this and wanted to hear you guys talk more. I think of all we're talking about is the death part, then this ranks low to me. Doomsday is one note. The arc is just a fight. Why Doomsday understands English or the concept of pro wrestling is beyond me. Yes, Superman dies, but he comes back. It is what springs from that story that elevates it. So I include World Without and Reign of the Superman as part of the event. So World Without Superman, called Funeral for a Friend when it came out, is a great set of books exploring how Superman's death impacted people. It shows how heroes felt they needed to pick up his mantle, shown visually in an Action One homage with Matrix, who also known as Supergirl at this stage, holding the car. And then Reign of the Superman was really good. As you say, the new characters introduced have survived and have become part of the DCU. But the mystery behind those four Supermen was gripping. Was Superboy his clone? If yes, why were his powers different? Is the cyborg really Superman? He seems to know a lot about Superman's life. And the Eradicator? Well, he looks just like Superman. So trying to figure out who these posers were was great fun. I'll also add that this arc improved Supergirl. She had been the subservient lover of Lex before this, but in this she matured to be her own hero. So given all that, this story, from death to return, was an awesome read. Glad it landed so high, and sorry for the rambling email, Ange. Thanks, Ange. Thank you, everyone who sent us feedback. If you want to send us feedback, you can send it to... Should be prepared. DCOCDcast@gmail.com, or you can get in touch via Twitter at DCOCDcast. So, Frank, if people want to get in touch with you or get into a fight with you like I used to, where can they do so? And what have you got going at the moment?
Rollspine Podcast is where we roughly once a week put something out. It's pretty randomized. If you like Spawn and 90s comics in general, Image Comics especially, the Spawnometer covers them on a semi-regular basis. We also tend to get out our music podcast, One Song Each, where each of us will tell a story or elaborate on a song. Each of us being the three guys that form Rolled Spine Podcast, myself, Illegal Machine, and Mr. Fix-It. So that's a fun little show. Our flagship is, of course, the Marvel Superheroes Podcast, which is slowly getting its way up to 100 episodes, and hopefully we'll start covering things besides the Marvel movies in the near future. Those are fun. But, you know, please enjoy all the Roll Spine Podcasts as much as you're able to tolerate me. If you're not able to tolerate me, well, my friends are... Actually, they're worse than me, so yeah, you're probably up a creek if you can't stand me. I'm actually the sane, like, grounding, pleasant one of the group three of us. So if you enjoy toxic masculinity and nerd rage, we're a happening place for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a cesspit of opinions, really. It's quite interesting. Anyway, I think that's it for this one. I think we're going to take some... I think we might be back with Awaiting for Doom next week with Mike and I. Not sure what we'll be covering, who knows. But next time DCOCD is on, we will be talking about, good grief, we're up to Zero Hour. So, yeah, come and join us for that if you're interested, and thank you for listening. Thanks, Frank.
Spill the blood!
Oh.